The 1768 Halifax County Courthouse stood about 500 feet west of the modern road and somewhat to your left. The building was a refinished barn. Nearby in 1781 is a food-serving tavern called an Ordinary. The railroad basically marks the route of Coles Ferry Road at this point. Given that armies of the day often camped along roads, you are probably in the camp. Another portion may be in the cleared area around the courthouse. Also in the camp are the captives from the Battle of Cowpens that Cornwallis had hoped to rescue. British or Loyalist captives from various places were held near the courthouse at times, usually before getting marched to prisoner of war camps farther north. On the 15th, as the army settles to bed, Greene writes from Camp Halifax Courthouse to the North Carolina legislature. He reassures them he will follow Cornwallis if the British head for Hillsborough, part-time capital of the state. But he warns them to be more careful about whom they draft. One North Carolina militia cavalry unit has deserted. He advises, "You must not put arms into the hands of doubtful characters. Depend upon it, they will deceive you in the hour of difficulty." Here the soldiers rest over the next few days while Greene sends a flurry of orders and letters. Some go to militia commanders in Virginia and North Carolina asking them to raise troops. He also orders a unit down the Dan, which becomes the Roanoke, to destroy any boats Cornwallis could use to cross. Yet he writes someone else he has camped here in order to tempt the enemy to cross the Dan. Lee and his cavalry get little rest. Greene sends them back across by a different ferry on the 19th to join up with the South Carolina militia approaching Cornwallis in North Carolina. Lee sends back a message that day informing Greene that Cornwallis is headed for Hillsborough. Probably among other supplies arriving here during the Army's stay are a big portion of the impressive totals provided to the Patriot cause by 25 women in Halifax County over the course of the war. A local historian calculates these included 380 pounds of bacon, 152 pounds of pork, over 5,681 pounds of beef, over 5,800 pounds of corn, about 397 pounds of cornmeal used for making hoe cakes for the troops, over 1,000 pounds of fodder, and 100 sheaves of oats for animal consumption, and 38 gallons of brandy. Lewis Morris, son of a general by that name, writes his father from here that news of the withdrawal will be very alarming to those at a distance and no doubt censured as a very unmilitary step, but I am convinced it was dictated by necessity and conducted with the strictest military propriety. He adds it was done without loss, not even a broken wagon to show that we were hurried. Morris complains that the militia were no help, more intent upon saving their property by flight home than embodying to protect it. Virginia military commanders call out their men, and Jefferson orders more. Hundreds arrive here or pass through shortly after the army leaves, while others from western counties head directly south. Greene's plan to attack Cornwallis is bad news for his wife, Catherine. Up north, she had traveled with him in Washington's army. A general in Philadelphia writes on the 21st that Catherine learned about Greene's promotion and moved south a few months earlier while at that general's home in Providence, Rhode Island. It took a good deal of address, talking, to calm her down, he reports. However, she wisely contrasted the sensation of tender disappointment with all conquering views of glory and heroism. These are indeed the views many have of Nathanael Greene, architect of a strategic withdrawal ending here that is still studied in war colleges today. Historical tidbits. Archaeologists found a Native American village near the wastewater treatment plant northeast of South Boston, one source says. Skeletons had been buried in the fetal position with beads below them. Also found were pottery pieces and food remains indicating residents were growing corn as early as 1400 using hoes of stone. They lived in round, thatch-roofed homes more than 20 feet wide within a stockade. Enslaved people in Halifax County planned a revolution in 1802, according to a local history book. The leader, Sancho, tried to recruit a man named Abram, saying the plan was for groups to gather at a tavern and store upon the sounding of a horn on the Christian holiday of Good Friday. Those with weapons were to bring extras for those who didn't have them, and ammunition would be taken from the store. Planning had begun as early as the prior summer, when Sancho supposedly approached another man and said, "Bob, you are a valuable man, and I wish for you to join me to revolt." Bob declined, pointing out that an earlier rising in Richmond had ended with the rebels destroyed. 37 were hung. Someone revealed the plot, and 18 men and women were tried at the new courthouse near the current one in Halifax on Saturday, May 15, 1802. Sancho and five others were found guilty and hung immediately.